Like in that contracting shop that you were talking about that you first worked in, what was your relationship to the men in the shop?
Well, they were all, I tell you the truth, I can't complain because my brother, first my folks have a tavern, and then my brother had a tavern, and the people that had this contracting shop, they were friends of ours, so they were in no way abusive to me. They regarded me, you know, and then my brother had the tavern, and they used to, the men that worked in that contracting shop, they used to go and get their cans of beer by my brother, you know, across the alley. And they were all very nice to me, but when the 19, I'll never forget one day when the strike in 1915 came on, and all these here women, they got scared, you know, because they thought that they would be out of work. And
well, sure, they were afraid because most of them came over with nothing.
Yeah. And everybody was asking all kinds of questions, what to do just in case. So the bosses there, you know, the contractors, they weren't a bit mean. They said, there's nothing we can do. Sit tight. There's nothing we can do till Banner and Progress negotiate with the union. Mm-hmm. And that's what really is.
See, they took all the big shops, and then they start working on the contracting shops. Mm-hmm. Because once they got all the big fellows, and you know, the small ones would follow. And that's the way everything's gone on ever since.
Yeah.
We always followed, the big shops always got first, and then the smaller shops all followed suit, you know.
What was your relationship with the workers in Hart Chapman Marks?
Oh, wonderful. We had no trouble. We had no trouble at all. We might probably run into a couple of people that have, like you'd have maybe a communist between a couple of hundred people, somebody that got up and chewed their mouth off about something that didn't help any, you know, just aroused a lot of trouble. But that was so seldom. I mean, but it seemed like everybody was working towards one goal.
What time did you get into?
Well, I was in 20.
Do you remember your first day of work?
Yes.
What happened?
Nothing exciting because my sister used to be an assistant chair lady, so I didn't have it too bad. I mean, I already knew the ropes. I was coming to the union office before I even worked for the.
Was that the year that the Kimball made a convention? What year was
it? Union Chicago?
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember that one. I remember the later one, but not the first one.
The first one.
Had you had any previous experience at all when you got that first job?
No.
Were you scared or were you nervous because of that?
No, I wasn't because my whole family was involved. My father, my mother, everybody was working.
Were you
on the machine
right away?
No, that's where I was. I was a flunky.
Oh, you were a flunky.
I was a flunky on the floor. I used to run errands for. I was keeping track of the work that was going from one floor to the next. See, we used to have a sheet, we used to send the work down, and everything that we used to send down, we had to put in the book. We had to write the numbers in the book of every lot, keep a record of it, all the specials, the individual pair of the pants, see. And then in between that, when I wasn't rushed, then if the girls needed things, I'd have to go from one department to the other to get it for them. Whatever they wanted me to do, I had to fill in. That was my job.
Did you?
I couldn't sit at the machine until I was 16 years old. When I got in, they wouldn't make us sit at the machine until we were 16. And I started when I was 15. So I was on the floor for a little over a year, and then I got my first job.
Did you know the lot in California? That used to be the manager there?
Mm-hmm.
See, I worked with him.
Is he active yet?
Well, I seen him when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Jerome?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you work, were there mostly women working on the floor that you worked on?
No, I wouldn't say that. There were a lot of men. We had a lot of men operators. We had some men that were even better operators than women.
Oh, yeah.
We had like the pocket making, what she was doing, that was considered a big trade. years ago now they've cut it down, they got modern machinery and they've got machines doing it, but in those days
the least buttermole machine does practically everything now.
Yeah. Now towards the end, before I retired, I was making buttermoles, I was doing everything. But I never did pocket making. No. But now they got machines doing that kind of work.
Out of one section they made about five.
Yeah, they've cut it down. See, before when you got in tavern, you got to be an operator. You really
started the line system. You know what kind of? I went to Prince Sebastian, and we went to East Chicago. You know where they had the line system when it first.
Oh yeah.
I can never forget that. It was so amusing. They started the parapet at one end, and by the time they got through the with it on the other end, the fence was leveled up.
Do you think that you had any specific skills that helped you in the organizing, say specifically with the women's local?
Well, I think the women's local had a lot to do with putting the skill into the women, because after all, Clara Leon, the business agent that they had there, she had a way.
She was an inspiration.
She had a way of. With the girls and with the women, you know, and she would get them active, and there isn't anything that she would ask them to do that they wouldn't do. If she needed help here, she'd say,
she had such a way about it. She had charisma. And that woman spent all her life there. She was here.
She was so dedicated, you know. She was so dedicated. She could could hardly walk, Olivia, and she was still
going strong,
yeah. And naturally, she got the women so interested in all of this here. And
you just couldn't turn her down if she asked her to do stuff.
Practically the beginning of it. Because once she got the women interested in it, they kept building and building. And
that's right.
In what ways did she appeal to them?
She appealed to them in every way that you can only think of. She knew how to talk to them. She knew how, she would encourage them. Somebody would have a little trouble, and they would come and they'd cry on her shoulder. She had a way of caressing them. She had a way of explaining to them. And when she wanted something done, she would ask you in such a nice way, "Angie, do you think you could make it? We're going to have this and we're going to have that. Do you think you could come and give us that?"
She had two children at home, you know, so it was kind of tough on her.
And you just can't refuse.
Yeah. And then she was the type of a person that if she heard that there was something wrong with any of the women in the other locals, she was like a mother. She'd go over and ask them, "Is there anything I can do to help you?" And she was an inspiration. She really was. When she died, I cried just like it was somebody in my own family. Because
they were very close to
I her. I was close with her for 40 years. For 40 years, we were inseparable.
And then the local ties, the tie makers were organized at that time, and then came Christmas time, Clara would get a lot of ties made up. And then
she was the business agent of the local, she'd ask Agnes, "Can I bring a couple of boxes of ties?" The local was small. They had no way of making money. They wanted to send a delegation to the convention.
Yeah.
See? So that's what she used to bring a box over to her, then she'd bring a box to me, and she used to do all this. She spent so much time of her own time. I mean, there was no Saturday or Sunday with her. It was just, she just devoted her life. You know, she never married, and she devoted all her time.
Anybody was sick, no matter how bad the weather was, we got to go, we got to go. She'd be depending on us to come and visit her. What'll she think if we don't go and visit her? She'll think we forgot about her. So then, that was the inspiration.
Looking at Clara's work and looking at your own work, do you think that there were any specific problems in organizing women?
I don't think if they went about it in the right way, why is it that they can organize the women today? And why couldn't they have done it so before? Today they're organizing by leaps and bounds. Why couldn't they have done it before? I know nobody. I had no trouble of doing what I was doing. Nobody didn't have to convince me.
Of course, the women themselves. I mean, before the women were more or less more timid. I mean, they didn't come forward, you know, to the front. But after they see the way that some of the girls work, especially like Agnes described to Clara, she used to go by her in such a way, and she'd always say to you, now when you approach people, don't if they give you, if they get sarcastic or they're fresh, just take it. Don't answer them back fresh. Just try to convince them, talk to them. Use a little psychology, you know? She had a way about her. That's true.
That's right. And you know, I was born in a political family. My brother was a ward committee man, and my husband was a cripple, so he held a political job. But my husband wasn't the kind that could go out and try to get the votes, because he always depended on me that I was more popular than him, that I could go out and do it. So I was in the public eye as far as politics is concerned, you see. I could go and I could approach with people, and I could get things done from the people. Whereas my husband, I was glad that he held the job sometimes, see. But he only had it through me, see. And if it wasn't for me being active in politics, he wouldn't have had it either.
Do you think you were a special case? Do you think that it was a certain type of woman that was active with the local or in the local? One that wasn't, like you were making a comment about how a lot of the women were timid and stuff. Looking at the kind of women that were in the local, were they exceptions to that kind of a...
There are always some exceptions
to everyone. There's some. But, you know...
What were the women... Could you characterize the women that were in the local early, when you first...
Were they active
in their own locals before?
Personally, myself, I don't think very many of them were very active until Clara really got after most of them. You were an exception to the rule in 144. My sister was, but she wasn't as active as you were because she came in much later.
But
I didn't have too many women.
I remember we had quite a few active. We had Josephine Gordon, she was very active. We had Anna Stanish, she was active.
Oh, yes.
And then we had that big
husband. Right. She used to be my chairlady.
Yeah.
Anna Stanish.
Yeah. Well, there was quite a few active women. There was Hannah Pollock, look.
Yeah.
There was Kate Sabolsky.
We had a real. Of course, they had a bunch from Hart, Chapman & Marks, the ones that walked out. And you remember Max, the redhead? He went to work for the United Garment Workers later on.
Yes, Shaps.
Shaps is Everett's brother, wasn't it?
Yeah,
because Max was a business agent in our local. Well, his sister-in-law, Esther Shaps,
yeah.
his sister. Esther Shaps, she was one of the ones that walked out from Hart, Chapman & Marks.
Yeah, I knew her too.
With Bessie Hillman.
That's right, because
there were a few women from Hart too, but you see, it's so far back that I can't remember all them. I remember those because they were the most active.
Shaps organized us.
Yeah.
He came in with Carlson, and naturally there was part of the agreement, so they came in, and that very day, I'll never forget, I don't think there was a happier person than I was, you know, because I knew about it already, see?
Yeah.
And when the business agents were, I didn't know the business agents. I didn't, but I knew that they were going to be that we were going to be organized. When they came in and told us all to come down to the union office that day, I walked so proudly that I think I was like a peacock. I went down the line there, and Stephen Schatz was my business agent. He was my business agent, and we had politics. Don't forget, in those days we had politics. We had the North Side was fighting with the West Side. We had an office on the north side, and I belonged to the north side office. And then we
had the union.
Yes. Then we had one on the west side. We also had one on the south side. Then we had one on Van Buren and Halston. So we had two business agents.
That's where I was.
So we had two business agents. Lockbach and Spitzer was here from the west side. And there was, Carlson, he didn't last that long because he passed away. And there were Shaps, and then came Magliano, and we had three of them. They had two of them here. We had three of them on the north side. Then when election time came, and then Joe Pavlak run, you know, there's such a big story that I couldn't go into details about everything. And then they stole the ballot boxes, and then the man that was supposed to be elected wasn't elected.
Why was that? Because
those things, you know, they happened years
ago. Well, you know how that works.
Part of the game.
Politics, like I'd like to have your election.
Then we were trying to get together with the North Side and the West Side. Was trying to get together so we wouldn't have this confusion and so we wouldn't have these kind of politics. We wanted to be one. So then we have one local meeting will be held on the North Side, the other local meeting was held on the West Side on Van Buren and Halsted. Until the Amalgamated built this building, then we got together.
Very consolidated model.
Yeah. And then
we were all together.
The business agent that used to take care of my shop, he was transferred to Cincinnati. And we had a convention, I'll never forget, it was supposed to be in Philadelphia, we had a convention. And I was slated to go as a delegate to that convention. But because my business agent was transferred to Cincinnati, and I was one of his henchmen, you know, I got gypped out of going to that convention. And her husband, he was with me.
My husband was on her side. Of course, I didn't know him then.
Yeah. And Josephine Gordon. Josephine Gordon.
Because she was with Izzy Rutherford.
She was with Izzy.
That's all politics.
But why
it came to fighting, I mean, as far as the
fighting, that just had nothing
union.
To do with
this
fighting.
Was just between
this
him. Between
this was between...
But as far as... fighting
for
the
rights.
They were all one. All 100%.
Yeah.
North, south, east, west.
Yeah.
They all contributed the same. I mean, they were all in it for what they could do for the union.
For the cause. We were all for one cause.
Right.
For making the union a better union and getting better conditions and better working, more money and better conditions.
But let me ask you something now.
Okay.
Now I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
Now, Sarah Rosner started some kind of a women's movement in California. You don't know anything about it. I know that she donated $500 to start it.
Scholarship.
Yeah, scholarship program.
Did they follow that up, huh?
That's what I wanted to ask you.
I don't know. I could write to the woman that's talking to Sarah and ask her.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me ask you. Was it the advance one time that she gave? Yeah. She donated $500 towards the scholarship. Now, we've got that here in Chicago, too. We've been doing that, Emily's been doing that for years now.
Yeah.
I was still working when he's been doing that.
We've got at least 10 years. But all these interviews that you're getting now, do I understand this correctly, that it's supposed to be put into the archives of the Amalgamated? Is this the purpose of it?
Vestmakers had one local. 144. The Vestmakers had one local, 152. The coat makers are the ones that had all these various locals. There was the Bohemian local, there was the Lithuanian local, there was the Italian local, there was the Polish local, there was the Local 39, which we call the All-American local. Anybody could, regardless of what you were, could belong to that local. And Local 275, the woman's local. But they were all mostly coat makers.
Why within the coat makers were there those kinds of divisions?
Well, because they wanted their own locals. They wanted their own speaking locals.
Because in the beginning they were all foreigners and they didn't understand the language.
So they wanted their own speaking locals. Like the Polish local, I'm Polish, I couldn't belong to that local, but seeing that the pants makers only had one local, I figured that that's where I belong. But if I would insist that I wanted to belong to that, to Local 275,
she could have become
I could have.
But well,
was it the same appeal that you wanted women to have a voice within the union, just like these particular ethnic groups wanted a voice within the union? You felt that this was the best way for you to...
Well, we thought that it would help our situation, our cause, sure. But we never asked anybody outright to, for instance, like when I left the women, when I left 144, I went up to my business agent and I spoke to him. I said to him, do you mind, I wanted to go into the coat shop to work because I had been sick and I couldn't lift bundles. And I could have got a job in the coat shop through Clara Leon, one of her shops, where I didn't have to carry bundles. At that time I had to go through an operation and I didn't want to go through with it. And I was trying to avoid it. So she says to me, I can get you something where you don't have to lug bundles, because I used to hemorrhage a lot. And lifting work like that would be was against my health. So I dodged it for about almost 3 years. So that's how I went into one of her shops to work. So then after I was in there for a while, she says to me, I'd like to have you stay. So I went in and I spoke to Spitzer and I told him, I said to him, you know, well, he knew my condition because my husband was active and in 144 too with Agnes, see? So he knew what it was all about. So he says to me, no, he says, I have no objections. I says, I don't want you to have any hard feelings that I'm gonna switch local. But I said, as long as I'm gonna work over there, I think it's only no more than right that if I'm in their shop, I should belong to their local. He said it was perfectly all right. That's how I transferred local. Then after the local was abolished, I went back into my original local, 144. See, our manager Finley called me in and said to me, well, now that the local is abolished, she said, we want you to go back to the local that you came from. And of course, I was happy to go back, you know, because...
Were most of the women that belonged to 275 from, say, one shop, like the shop where you were approached? Or?
No.
They were all from different shops. But they were all put into the coat shop local. All these women had originally come in from the coat shop. I was the only one that was from the paint shop. But they were all from different coat shops, like Agnes explained to you. Some were from the Polish, some were from the Lithuanian local. So we had a lot of girls that belonged to local.
They were all from within locals that were part of the coat making.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. So little by little, from the beginning, they eliminated the Lithuanian local first, then the Polish local, then the Bohemian local,
then the Italian local,
then the Italian local, and then when Clara Leon passed away, they would have never abolished the local if it wasn't been that Clara passed away. But our membership was getting smaller and smaller, and of course our shops were moving out of the city. Our membership here in the city was... Originally, we were 38,000. We're down to
over 40,000.
Yeah, we're down to less than 9,000 today.
Our membership in the pen shop was practically as large as the whole
membership is today. Oh. That's right.
Was
now this is Ashland Boulevard. The Women's Trade Union League used to be here on Ashland Boulevard, and we were very active.
Yeah,
Jane Addams. Jane Addams, that was her project for the Howe House, see? Then, the Women's Trade Union League started, and we were very active in that too. No matter what they had, we used to go over to help them too. We did it all for the cause of women. And then we started getting teachers from there. They were, through the Women's Trade Union League, we got teachers that we didn't have to pay for, because at that time the union couldn't afford to pay for all that kind of stuff. We got teachers to come in and teach us dramatics and different things. And they were being paid, you know, through the Women's Trade Union League. And like I told you, as far as politics and everything were concerned, everything went through the women's local here in the city until the local was abolished.
Was there a particular reason that the women's local was within the code makers? Was that because all the women that were interested in organizing the women's local happened to be in the code makers?
No, not particularly. Mm-hmm. No. It just happened that the women that formed the women's local happened to be from the code department. But she was in there. She was in there before a lot of those women were even, like all those board members that were in the women's local. Ray.
Yeah,
and the other one, Irene Dash,
yeah.
And all them, you were more active than all of those girls were. But it just so happened that Sarah Rosner was working in the shop with these particular girls, and she brought them in just like she brought in girls from her shop into the pants shop local. You know, you get to be a leader. I had the same thing in my shop. you know, you know, there always have to be people that have to leave. And we have, that's how the thing came about. But there were more people in the coat shop than there were, the membership was larger in the coat shops than the pant shop, because there's a lot more detail to the coat than there is to the pant. That's why they were about 3 to 1 of us. Wouldn't you think?
Oh, yes.
Every bit of it. So they were more powerful than we were, as far as membership was concerned. But as far as activity, that's where the activity really started, was in the pant shop. But then, because of the fact that they were so, they were 3 to 1 of us, naturally, they got more offices. They got, you know, we had so many to represent so many people. Just like we've got the joint board now. The joint board, they have to be, I think there's one delegate allowed for every 100 members, something like that. But it just so happened that Sarah Rosner at the time was very active in her shop. That was, and Clara wasn't as outspoken then as Sarah was. But then after Sarah got in as business agent, she didn't last very long.
Okay.
Because she didn't have what Clara had. She
what
had a good
that?
Mind on her. She had a good mind on her, but she wasn't she tried to be a leader, but it didn't work out because her ways, her the way she conducted herself, and the way she conducted herself too. You know, when you try to do something, you have to even though you have to be forward, you still have to watch whose toes you step on, and you just don't insult the men outright. You can't do that, because you have to work with them. So you want to keep a certain amount of friendship between you. You know what I mean? You might feel hurt and you might feel bad, but you still have to deal with them. So you have to keep yourself. And she didn't last very long with business as you were. Clara Leon was business as my God. She must have been in for it. Well, she was in it. She was friends with me for 4 years, and she was a business agent all the time that I knew.